In the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, we meet the Imperium of Man, a galaxy-spanning empire teetering on the edge of collapse. Imagine humanity's last and only superpower, an empire of a million worlds and trillions of souls, all clinging to life by the fingernails of faith and ammunition. It is ruled by one being who hasn't left his chair in 10,000 years. The God Emperor of Mankind. This once great warrior now sits comatose on the golden throne of Terra, kept alive by daily sacrifices of psychers powering the Astronomican beacon. He does nothing but gaze ahead, yet somehow the vast Imperium survives on his sheer will. It's equal parts worship and fear. The people pray to him as a god, even though he can't defend them from simple warp storms or orc raids. Every new generation is born into fanaticism, told that he is all they have. They believe it, because believing is much cheaper than dying. Life in the Imperium is a constant battle. Every day, billions of human souls wake up to a new siege, a fresh plague, or the Imperium's own soldiers smashing down their doors for heresy or conscription. Every corner of this empire is a war zone. Trenches stretch for miles, tanks roll relentlessly, and Thunderhawk gunships tear across the sky. Even at home, nothing is peaceful. The Adeptus Mechanicus might be on the radio, reminding you how blessed you are that your laser gun still works. They prey to machines, after all. They track your every vehicle's maintenance with more devotion than churchgoers. The Imperium even includes so-called abhumans, towering ogrin brutes who grunt and smash with primitive joy, and tiny rattling sharpshooters who could hide behind their own eyelashes. The new leagues of Votan, space dwarves, have even rejoined under the Imperium's banner as fully sanctioned humans, all sworn to the same Emperor, of course. If it breathes on a human world, it's obligated to die for the Emperor's glory. And if you think that's harsh, remember, the only alternative is extinction, and nobody talks about that. So you buckle up and survive. Travel and communication in the Imperium are a nightmare. The Emperor's empire stretches over thousands of light years, but the void between stars is full of warp storms and demonic terrors. To talk to another world, you need psychic navigators and psychers sacrificed to power the Astronomican, a horrific psychic lighthouse fueled by the Emperor himself. Without that beacon, Imperial ships would tumble blind through the warp into parts unknown, and certainly very dead parts at that. In practice, you're more likely to break down shuffling paperwork in a system's governor's palace than have a simple phone call with your neighbor planetside. Every star system is effectively in quarantine. Hello down there. Doom is above you in the warp. The Imperium's answer is to build more rifles and more chapels, then pray nobody in between grows bored of the slaughter. The Imperium arms itself on an almost ridiculous scale. The Astra Militarum, Imperial Guard, fields trillions of soldiers, platoons so vast they make even World War II look like a fun weekend paintball match. On every world, children are taught to grip laser guns almost from birth. The words for the Emperor are their lullaby. Trenches crawl with billions of men, tanks outnumber clouds, and artillery makes every horizon blaze with fire. If a tyrant so much as coughs oddly, expect an entire military campaign to develop around it. But when things really get desperate, the Emperor's true angels of death arrive, the Space Marines. Imagine hulking warriors in ceramite power armor, each chapter numbering around 1,000 battle brothers. These demigods leap out of the sky in Thunderhawk gunships, fists meeting bolters, and turn the tide with sheer presence. A drop pod landing with a thunk usually means the average guard trooper's day just got infinitely better, or worse, depending on who's marked to fight. Space Marines don't speak much. They just show up, shoot anything that moves, and quote existential grimdark one-liners while doing it. If you ever see a space marine on the battlefield, you pretty much know you're either saved or screwed. They're almost that good. Complementing the guard and marines are other fanatical branches. The Adepta Sororitas, Sisters of Battle, are power-armored warrior nuns straight out of a nightmare. These flame-wielding martyrs incinerate heretics with bolters and flamethrowers while chanting unflinching hymns. If you ever spot one striding through the smoke, mercy isn't on the menu. There are also hidden chapters like the Grey Knights, superhuman psyker hunters who take on demons in secret, and aristocratic knight houses that field massive war machines called Titans. Think giant bipedal tanks with enough guns to flood a continent. The Imperium is full of surprises like these, but the undercurrent is the same. Build more guns, grease more bullets, repeat until not all of humanity is dead. Then there's the Inquisition. If you think your world is safe, think again. Inquisitors are like the Imperial TSA, only instead of confiscating liquids, they vaporize your entire planet. They have the authority to execute anyone for the slightest hint of heresy, mutation, or Xenos influence. On some days, it feels like their favorite pastime is punishing someone for thinking fast, because doubt itself is a crime. Entire planets have simply vanished under their inquisitorial decrees. Paranoia is official policy in the Imperium. One wrong word in an emperor's prayer, one twitch of a controlled warp power, and boom, you're an enemy of the state, and now a candidate for flame. Everybody is essentially walking on eggshells, because you never know when a black-robed inquisitor or his cadre might show up in a thunderhawk at noon to drag you away for questioning. Through it all, the Imperial cult preaches fanaticism like a drug. The Adeptus Ministorum, Ecclesiarchy, teaches that the Emperor is a god, and that worship is everything. Doubt is heresy. Aliens are abominations. Any hint of witchcraft is devil worship. Every citizen learns this from childhood, and usually believes it, because the alternative, being a burning heretic, is painfully obvious. The entire social order is church and militaristic. You pray your routine, take your water stops as confessions, salute the symbol of the Aquila like it's carved in stone. At least it's never boring. Moral decisions are enforced by flamers and bolt rounds. In short, the Imperium is an endless war machine of zealotry and steel. A brutal empire of bureaucracy, bolts, and bolters, held together by desperation, superstition, and sheer bloody-minded determination. Every soldier in torn fatigues, every cogitator endlessly grinding in some data diviner, every prayer chanted in a rat-infested bunker, exists to keep humanity alive one more day. It's grim, it's dark, but it survives. That is all. On the flip side, chaos. If the Imperium is locked down tyranny, chaos is a cosmic mosh pit of blood and madness. The four ruinous powers of the warp are like an evil rock band with the worst frontmen imaginable. Horn, the bloodthirsty god of war who utterly forbids magic and chants blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. Think a berserker roommate who eats nails for breakfast. Tsintash, the scheming god of change and magic, an evil wizard megacorporate CEO juggling conspiracies like spreadsheets. Nurgle, the jovial grandfather of decay who spreads diseases like holiday cheer. Imagine your weird uncle giving you a plague as a birthday gift. And Slaanesh, the decadent prince of excess who throws endless parties of pleasure and pain. The galaxy's worst nightclub promoter, basically. All four are insanely hungry for worship and power, and they give their followers demonic gifts in return. Chaos worshippers take these idols literally. There are cults for each god, and some fanatics even worship chaos undivided, all four gods at once, just to be sure the cosmic VIP list doesn't ignore them. Chaos Space Marines are the Imperium's heroes turned traitors. Back during the legendary Horus Heresy, half of the Emperor's Space Marine legions rebelled. Now these traitor warbands, names like World Eaters, Death Guard, Thousand Suns, and the Black Legion, roam the galaxy on corrupted starships. They paint their armor black and terror yellow, spike it with horns, and use demon-infused weapons. Each legion has its own flair. Some crow about war. We are the eternal wag. Some whisper forbidden secrets. Some cough up real plagues. And they all giggle like children in the dying moments of every planet they conquer. You might even recognize the big villain in the bunch. Abaddon, the despoiler of the Black Legion, Horus's right-hand man. If you ever see him standing on the horizon, it means things are really about to get worse. Chaos Marines do not negotiate. They kill, corrupt, and move on, worse than a warp storm gone rogue. But chaos isn't only about the traitorous Marines. The warp itself is crawling with things that go bump in the night. Picture every dark emotion you've ever felt, given consciousness and set free. Fear, anger, envy, pleasure, all boiling into nightmarish storms. When enough evil pools, it forms demons. These are literal monster demons from the warp. Khorne's bloodletters charge with axes and thirst for war. Tsinch's flamers and horrors shimmer with arcane fire and mutating flesh. Nurgle's plague-bearers crawl with ugly smiles, pushing contagion like it's a gift. Slaanesh's daemonettes dance with bladed grace, luring victims into ecstasy before slamming a sword through them. If a world is festering with fear or rage, literally any scrap of thought can sprout a demon and drag someone screaming into the warp. Even the bravest psyker would rather face a hive of genestealers than stare into the eyes of a Nurgling, the little bugger demons of Nurgle, who's giggling and trying to nibble on his soul. And it gets worse. On any Imperial world, secret cults to these gods might already be crawling your neighborhood. Picture your friendly neighbor whispering about how Emperor is boring. Have you tried worshipping Khorne? Or slip you a drop of green wine as Nurgle's blessing? These chaos cultists hide in plain sight, eating dinner with you by day and summoning demons by midnight. Often, when the Inquisition finally sniffs them out, they always will. The cult goes out in a blaze of unholy fireworks. "Yes, yes, the Dark Prince has claimed us," they cheer, before being torn apart in interrogation. It's like whack-a-mole. Stomp one cult, and two more have sprouted elsewhere. No fanaticism is too twisted, no spell too forbidden for them to try. In short, chaos is relentless corruption. It's like an ancient virus that never stops mutating. The Imperium fights it on a thousand fronts, but chaos only needs one weakness. And chaos is patient. It will wait eons for the perfect moment, and then it pounces with all four claws. If a star fortress falls or a general cracks under stress, chaos will be right there to claim them. Warhammer fans have a saying, a thousand emperors could fall and still chaos will grin. In the end, despair is eternal for those who taunt the warp. Next, orcs. Think of orcs as the galaxy's green war machines. These are fungus-born brutes in scaly skin who live for one thing, war, which they call a war. An orc is as subtle as a rolling thunder tank. They're big, they're loud, and they immediately want to fight everything they see. Peace is literally not in their vocabulary. If an orc sits still for more than 10 seconds, it's generally because it's deciding which way to mug or maim. Every orc is born with a chopper in hand and a grin on its face, so when you see a bunch of them gathered around, it means a warg is imminent. A warg is the orc version of, "Hey guys, let's go party with bullets." Once enough orcs band together, usually led by the biggest, meanest war boss having a spooky dream, their belief forms a psychic propulsion. The gods Gork and Mork, we'll get to them, literally tell them, go fight, and off they go on a continent-spanning rampage. A single wah can make a tiny raiding party grow into an unstoppable tsunami of chopa and shooters. Despite seeming like a rabble, orcs actually have a twisted kind of genius. Their technology just works because of orky belief. They build fighters out of spare scrap metal, paint them bright red because red makes them go faster. Science says so. And to everyone's amazement, the planes actually fly. Orc cannons, killer tanks, and gargant robots are cobbled together from junk and luck, yet somehow function well enough to make Imperial techies lose their lunch. If an orc says gun, there's a 90% chance it will absolutely shoot something. Any contraption with enough orcs shouting at it will happily do its job. Gravity, hydraulics, reality itself, all just suggestions. Their philosophy is, if it's yellow and it purrs, it's safe. Yellow means cowardice, ironically, so lots of big booming engines are painted yellow to say, beware. Orc society is ruled by might makes right. They organize into tribes and clans that fight constantly, and not just enemies. Orcs love punching each other, too. At the top of any group is a war boss. The biggest, loudest, most bloodthirsty orc around. Every smaller orc then calls him boss, and if they don't, the boss would be happy to accidentally drop something on them. The little grots and snotlings, orc goblins and toddlers, do all the grunt labor and then get thrown into the front lines for target practice. Again, orc efficiency. Orcs even have their own gods, Gork and Mork. Gork is brutally cunning, and Mork is cunningly brutal. In practice, nobody explains the difference, but orcs think of them as two sides of the same ramshackle coin. When a war boss yells out in triumph on the battlefield, that's an orcish version of an orc amen to these gods. Every time an orc boss guns up a stolen war bike or swings a chopper at a tank, he's basically preaching in Gork and Mork's church. It's not so much religious as just how they organize their YGE energy. In short, orcs are the galaxy's perfect embodiment of battlefield chaos. They breed faster than tribbles on steroids, love explosions more than lunch, and will never stop until everything's either dead or desperately choked out. Their motto could easily be, if it ain't killing it, we're not worth our boots. If you see any green on the horizon, say your last prayers. It's only a matter of time before that green blob comes in for a hug with its 4,000 spikes. Now let's talk about the Eldari, formerly known as the Eldar, the ancient elf-like race who once ruled the stars. Picture a civilization so advanced and hedonistic that they literally birthed a chaos god, Slaanesh, into existence through decadence. That was 10,000 years ago, the fall of the Eldar. Their galaxy-wide empire was shattered. Most were consumed or scattered. The survivors now live in splintered subcultures, each trying to survive in its own dramatic way. The Craftworld Eldar are what most people think of first. They live on giant hollow star cruise ships called Craft Worlds, forever floating through space. Each one is a single nomadic planet ship with cities running inside their shells. These Eldar are elegant warrior psychics. Every one of them is a born warp sensitive, so hurling psychic fireballs and slicing through demons with swords is just Tuesday for them. They strictly follow personal paths, training disciplines, to avoid the excesses that destroyed their race. If a Craftworld Eldari ever dies, their soul is caught in a spirit stone to prevent Slaanesh from devouring it. They wear flowing armor in bright yellows, blues, or reds, and fight with weapons like shuriken catapults and ghost swords. Craftworld Eldar are graceful, aloof, and deadly. They treat warfare like an art form. In battle, they strike with precision, vanishing on jet bikes or in shimmering warp paths before you can even blink. They maintain a tragic dignity, noble but always looking just a bit lonely, because they remember when their whole race was the rightful rulers of the galaxy. Then there are the Drukhari, the Dark Eldar, who took a much darker road. After the fall, a splinter of Eldar survived in the webway city of Komorosh, shunning the light. These are the sadistic space pirates. Think high-tech criminals and torturers who travel on sleek, needle-ship skimmers. They raid other worlds to capture slaves, to feed their hunger and torment, and buy exotic drugs. The Drukhari are all about pain and power. Their archons and succubi treat torture like a sport, and each raid is basically a VIP party with tentacles. They're fast, deadly, and terrifying, striking without warning from the shadows of the webway. Each Drukhari wears living armor that creeps and twists on its own. Their lightning swords sting and cut with energy. Unlike their forgiving-sounding name, they'll show you no mercy. Escape from Komorosh is practically impossible. Even other Chaos cultists are scared of the Dark Eldar. Next up, Harlequins. Yes, actual cosmic clowns. Harlequins are Eldari wildcards who serve a mysterious laughing god, Segorok. They roam the webway and the galaxy performing deadly dances and plays, keeping alive the ancient legends of their people. Picture dazzling acrobats in bright harlequin-patterned armor, juggling shuriken knives and holographic illusions in the middle of battle. One moment they're cracking jokes and cracking skulls. The next they vanish into thin air or ride psychic dragons to reappear behind your lines. Harlequins are freakishly agile and unpredictable. If they were in a circus, your tent would be stained with guilt and confusion. They remind the craftworlders of their history, even as they butcher any foe or friend with panache. There's also the Inari, a very new thing. The Inari are a recent rebel faction made of disillusioned Eldar from all walks of life. They believe in a new god of the dead, Inead, who could one day slay Slaanesh and free all Eldar souls. Led by the prophet Ivrain, they're on a quest to gather 5 legendary crone swords, which should theoretically trigger Inead's rebirth. Think of them as the upstart underdogs who gathered all the Avengers, Craftworlders, Dark Eldar, even Exodites, to say, "Let's end this." Their army is a motley mix. Some giant battle tanks of Eldar design, some sleek jets, some spider-like warp leviathans. Not many fully trust them yet, but their resurrection plan is one heck of a Hail Mary. And don't forget the Exodites, the remaining tribal Eldar, who never wanted high tech. A few Eldari settled on backwater worlds and basically became fantasy elves. They live on lush, forested planets and ride giant dinosaurs into battle. Their vehicles might be living beasts and wooden carvings with rune magic. They maintain temples to nature and the old gods, far from the sins of the craft worlds. In the grand tapestry, they're the wild card minority saying, "We'll just grow our own dinner and anger management." In summary, the Eldari are all about style, sorrow, and survival. Elegant warrior poets on starships, vicious pirates in the shadows, masked dancers of death on cosmic stages, and destiny-driven cultists of death. Pick your flavor. They were once galaxy dominators, now they scrape by on hope, luck, and a last shard of pride. If you meet an Eldar, expect either breathtaking grace or horrifying cruelty. Probably both. On to Necrons. Imagine the ultimate undead skeleton army in space. These guys are ancient, older than the Eldar, older even than the galaxy itself. Once, eons ago, they were flesh and blood Necrontyr living short, miserable lives. Desperate for immortality, they made a pact with star gods called the Sitan, cosmic beings who literally consume stars. The Necrontyr handed over their bodies to become living metal shells for these Sitan. Those star gods ate a bunch of humans anyway, and the Necrontyr ended up regretful, but by then, too late. They became the Necrons, a race of skeletal robots, all worshipping what they think is justice, but mostly just stale rage. Eventually, they rebelled against their Sitan masters, like scattering them to bits, locked themselves in stasis crypts across the galaxy, and waited. Now, 60 million years later, they're starting to wake up. One by one, tomb worlds and massive pyramids begin to rumble back to life, and waves of Necron warriors march out. These aren't zombies, though. They're super tough robots. If you shoot them, they just shrug it off and telefrag you back. If you blow off a Necron's head, another one detaches from his back and says, "You're gonna regret that." They phase in and out of reality. You shoot at them, and sometimes your bullets pass through empty air only to hit you in the back. Their weapons, Gauss flares and Tesla cannons, literally strip your molecules apart. These things aren't trying to negotiate a ceasefire. They consider all organic life to be inferior biomass, which is pretty much a polite way of saying food or furniture. Necron society is organized into dynasties led by overlords, each awakening after millions of years. If one overlord wakes and conquers a star system, he might carve it up for resources. They also have weirdly reverent priests and nobles, think Lord Commander and Nightbringer, who follow pre-imperial Egyptian-style rituals. Some of them are fun to know. There's a bug-eyed minor lord who collects rare imperial relics like some warped nerd. But mostly they're not in the mood for chit-chat. The Necrons want to remake the galaxy in their image. Their goal is to wipe out the Xenos and reclaim what they see as theirs by birthright. In short, Necrons are the undead robot skeletons from your worst nightmare. They stomp out of tomb worlds, uplift their Gauss rifles, and start cleaning house at subatomic levels. The Imperium panics about demons, but don't forget, there are ancient spaceships that just woke up and find everything new. One day, the galaxy had a lot of living statues. Now it has dead metal legions instead. Best not to let them get comfortable. Next, we have the Tyranids. Alien biomonsters from beyond the galaxy. Picture an entire race of insects given mind and hunger, focused on one thing: eat everything. These Xenos arrive in hive fleets, enormous living starships that look like giant slimy islands of teeth. When a Tyranid fleet shows up at your system, it doesn't negotiate or ask questions. It begins stripping the planets of all biomass, plants, animals, people, maybe even your walls, if they're not careful. Tyranids are like the ultimate bioengineered vacuum cleaner for life. The swarm consists of countless chitinous horrors. You've got writhing ripper swarms, little slug aliens that spill out of the ground and nibble on everything. Towering Carnifex brutes, like organic tanks with razor claws. Winged hive tyrants, psychic queens that coordinate the swarm and slam armies into dust. And slimy zoanthropes that shoot warp spells. They even build giant two-legged bio-titans that stomp through cities like angry dinosaurs. Everything in a Tyranid horde serves a purpose. The little ones distract and burrow, the medium ones feast, and the big ones provide synaptic guidance or grab and crush bosses. And the truly terrifying part? They evolve on the fly. Each time a hive fleet fails to consume a world, the survivors adapt. If you kill one type of beast, another prototype bursts out, armoring up or growing new weapons to counter what you used. It's like fighting an enemy that learns your tactics while you're being shredded. The hive mind knows exactly what to do next. So if you see one wave of tyrannids fail, don't relax. They'll come back better. A final nasty trick. Genestealer cults. Before a big tyrannid invasion, a small pack of genestealers, acid-spitting matriarchs, might slip onto your planet and infect your population. They replace a few people with hybrids that look human but have tyrannid DNA. These hybrids interbreed and quietly turn whole populations against themselves from the inside. It takes decades. Your neighbors, families, and maybe even the planet's governor end up worshipping the hive mind undercover. Then, just as the tyrannid main fleet arrives, the entire planet is already sabotaged from within. The locals pop out of hidden tunnels, shank anyone still loyal to the Emperor, and open the gates for their space worm babysitters. It's horrifyingly clever. The Imperium often only discovers a genestealer cult when it's almost too late. They usually manifest with flamboyant violence and about a million traitors shouting, "For the Great Devourer!" In short, Tyrannids are like Mother Nature on steroids, armed with acid and spines. They don't hate you, they just don't know you exist. They will eat planets clean and never stop to say thanks for the meal. The only known countermeasures are to burn planets before they're consumed, or hope a space marine battlesuit punched one into space. Even then, it's a race against the clock. One hive fleet can consume an entire planet's biosphere in days. So if you hear a chittering beast loudspeaker saying, "Rah," you should definitely not offer your salad. Last of the big ones, the Toe Empire. The Toe are comparatively the new kids on the block. Think space futurists and corporate idealists rolled into one. They worship the concept of the greater good, which means everyone working together under the Toe philosophy. That sounds all warm and fuzzy, but don't let it fool you. Greater good also means any independent thinkers are rapidly debrained or deported. The Tao have castes for everything. Ethereal leaders, mysterious smooth-talking gurus, warrior castes, fire caste shock troops in huge battle suits, drone workers, builder castes, diplomats, water caste media team, and pilots, air caste jet fighter aces. They live on relatively utopian high-tech worlds with drones picking up trash and bipedal mechs brewing tea. In battle, the Toe rely on ranged firepower and teamwork. They don't like close combat. The Imperial Guard can go brawl, and the Eldar can, well, Eldar brawl. So the Tau stand back and volley. Their battle suits are iconic. Towering, powered exoskeletons that can punch through tank armor or shrug off bolter bolts. They also happily accept any alien who wants to join the cause. Their auxiliaries include the Kroot, carnivorous tracker species who say, "Thanks for the protein," and Vespid, insectoid flyers who love high places. If you're an independent world, they'll likely offer you biotech and tech upgrades. Say yes, and maybe you'll live in a proud protectorate. Say no, and you might find your temple of individuality replaced by a Toe factory complex or an impromptu railgun target. Make no mistake, if you upset the Tau, they will retaliate. They might be about polar opposite to the Imperium's medieval oppression, but they can still send kill teams. They're expansionist, but subtle. They might come to you with a smile and an offer of free energy, but at the end of the day, they need resources and obedience, like any empire. The catchphrase is ironically idealistic, "For the greater good," and they sincerely believe it. Socially, it means we're all one big family, and they love saying that, right before they beam you if you commit hate crimes against everyone. In summary, the Tau are basically the space-age children who want everyone to play nice while carrying a really big stick. They have some of the prettiest technology and architecture in the galaxy, glossy white battle suits, floating cities. But they're just as pragmatic about warfare as any. You might admire their discipline and tech until they lock in their real reasons. Finally, the Leagues of Votann, the Space Dwarves. These are hardy, stubborn survivors from the depths of the galaxy. Think dwarves with battle suits. They went into deep space long ago and have been bouncing around core systems mining and trading. Now they've shown up again in force, proud and bearded, electrobeards mostly. The Votann believe in something called the Ancient Ways, basically honor and resource collection. They're big into mining the rich core worlds, using hearty combat suits and grim determination. An orc might call them tiny armored Krushas, but don't underestimate them. These squat engineers will outlast most foes. Each dwarf family, or clan, is bonded by a living AI core that holds the memory of their ancestors, so they live and fight with that weight on their shoulders. They pilot massive Ironbreakers battle suits, throw hammer grenades, and brew dangerous beers. They can be surly business partners or vicious warriors. The Imperium isn't sure what to do with them now. They're human enough to fight Xenos and even friendly to Imperial trade, but they've got their own agenda. One thing's certain. An orc war boss is going to regret bragging in front of a Votann blacksmith. In short, the Leagues of Votann are proud, no-nonsense survivalists. Space elves might dance through life, but space dwarves will lug it through with lanterns and grumbles. They love shiny minerals, a good scrap, and strictly dislike being called squats. You'll hear about it in a charmingly dwarvish curse. They don't bow to the Emperor, but they'll fight for the survival of humanity, as long as they get paid the appropriate toll, of course. There you have it, every faction of the 41st millennium, laid out in all its grim detail, the big ones and the smaller cousins. The galaxy is a mess of holy wars, alien horrors, orcish rampages, and techno-utopias, all trying to outsurvive each other. And now, if you've made it this far without having your mind blown by heresy or cracked open by a claw-armed Eldar, do us a favor. Make sure you subscribe to Tales from the Void. After all, in the Emperor's name, or whatever god you prefer, you'll want to see more of these grim tales. Subscribe lest the warp claim your attention instead. End transmission.